Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. We're still kind of catching up here. I was away last week, Saunders was away last week, David's away this week, Robert's got a really busy school week, so it's been a bit all over the place. Obviously, the SmackDown summaries are up to date, now Retro Raws are up to date, and I'm hoping that Robert and I will be recording in the next day or so for Raw. Worst case, David and I do a doubler on Tuesday. So, we'll get it all sorted. We've got Lucha Underground podcast going up in the next day or two. Sandra and I have already recorded that, but unfortunately the audio is monstrously bad because of me, so I need to spend a lot of time fixing that, but it is salvageable, so it's fine. I will fix it. Sandra, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well, Kenny. I'm just, you know, I'm there's so much to talk about on this Retro Raw. Like, most of it was pish, right? But I don't know. Like, I spent a while watching this show the other night because I was exhausted again. Like, I need to stop watching Retro Raw at like 3 a.m.
It's the worst because already it's an uphill battle to get you to watch it.
So it is.
Watching it exhausted is not the best time.
It does not help at all. It really doesn't. But that's sometimes the only time I have to watch it because, like, I was gone last week, so I didn't really have time to do much in the world of wrestling, right? Like, I feel like I took, you know, 4 or 5 days completely away from wrestling, which I never do. So I feel so behind on everything. Like, what's happening in the world?
There's a lot. There's a lot going on in the world and in wrestling.
And in wrestling 20 years ago.
Of course. Now, you can also go over to our YouTube page, youtube.com/InsideTheRopes, where the Bobby Roode interview has gone up. 6 minutes of us talking to Bobby Roode about signing with WWE, the Glorious Song, the Glorious Bombs, all these different things. It's great. Go listen to it. Go watch it. It is very good. But we're here to talk about Raw from June 16th, 1997. So let's just get into it, shall we?
I think we should.
So we kick off with Vince and JR talking about Shawn Michaels and sort of clearing up that he will be back and he'll be out for 4 to 6 weeks. And the altercation that him and Brett had backstage re-aggravated his knee injury. And, you know, but he will be back. As far as Brett goes, his knee's hurt, but he'll be back in a few days. But there's going to be a WWF Tag Team Championship tournament with 8 teams that will begin tonight, and the winners of that tournament will face Stone Cold Steve Austin and a partner of his choosing to decide who the tag team champions will be, and if Shawn is back in time, he can be Steve Austin's partner. Thoughts on all of this to unpack before we do
I mean, there's just so much to even just start out the show, right? How did Vince word it? It was really awkward. He's like, at that time, because he mentions the fight between Shawn and Brett, and he's like, at that time, we thought Shawn wouldn't return to action. At that time, we thought neither man was injured. That turned out to not be entirely accurate, or something like that. It's like, that is the worst way of saying, so, we thought Shawn might be gone, but he's not. And, you know, we thought they were fine, but they're not. And so apparently they're both injured or whatever. There's a big Shawn as a quitter sign in the background, which made me laugh. But yeah, this tournament thing. So Steve Austin could theoretically choose Harvey Whippleman as his partner if he wanted, right?
Yes, he could.
He could this time. Like, this time it actually makes a little more sense. But there's just, it seems weird that they're having a tournament. I mean, I like tournaments. I love tournaments. And so, like, having a tournament for the number one contender for the tag team championship is cool.
Well, this is a tournament to determine who the tag champs are, because Steve Austin doesn't have the belt right now. The belts have been taken from him.
I was so confused for most of this episode. I didn't understand going on.
Do you know why? Because it was worded horrendously. That's the reason. There was no
So it wasn't just me being exhausted and partially drunk?
No. But, I mean, that's always part of it. But,
right.
But no, so the idea is that because Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels cannot be tag team champions, the belts have been taken off them. This tournament will crown the tag champs, but basically we'll have 8 teams, and the winner of that will face Steve Austin and a partner of his choosing for the belts.
Okay, so the belts are technically vacant
technically,
at this
yes.
point.
Technically, yes.
I did not understand that part of the story.
I do just want to say, obviously we like to update you with what's been going on outside of wrestling. The day before this show, there was a pretty serious car accident that took place involving Doug Furness, Phil LaFon, Flash Funk, and Psycho Sid. what a car that would be.
Oh my gosh.
They were on their way to Ottawa to wrestle, and Sid was driving a Lincoln Continental, and he was doing 100 miles per hour, and he was apparently... This is the best story, because only this could cause a car accident with Sid. They had the accident when Sid was trying to adjust the sunroof, and the car went out of control, hit the shoulder of the road, rolled four times about a mile from the border, and the car was destroyed to a point of being unrecognizable, with all four wrestlers taken to hospital in an ambulance.
Damn.
So
like,
Sid was, they initially thought Sid was going to be really badly injured, but he was actually okay. He just had like a concussion and some numbness in his arms and legs. So basically that is why Sid is no longer going to be in the Canadian Stampede team.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So for this point, it's not that Sid has no shoot. I know that's been the story. I feel like we're just, these are the Sid files that we continuously have to like tell you where he is if he's not wrestling. That's not a softball thing.
I feel like I'm just
thing.
Clinging to any news of Sid at this point. Like,
that's why I'm
what's going on in
you.
His life?
So he's just had a car accident because he tried to adjust the sunroof while he was driving. Because you
at
know,
100 miles per hour.
Because he's Sid. And,
exactly.
And so yeah, but basically, Furness was the most seriously injured. He had a separated and broken shoulder. He had to have surgery. Phil LaFon had a concussion and some cuts. Flash Funk came out of it pretty much unscathed. So, the least important person came out of it fine.
Poor Flash Funk.
Poor Flash Funk.
I mean, I just hope that Furness and LaFon can go on to again be the most exciting tag team in the World Wrestling Federation.
This is true. Now, the thing with Sean was that Sean had got his lawyers involved in real life, where he was basically wanting to try and get out of his contract and like
because so he wanted to go to WCW, right?
Yes. Now at this point, Sean was being paid $15,000 a week as his guarantee. But WWF basically were like, "Well, we're not going to pay you that until you come back."
Right. I mean, he's in breach of contract for not showing up.
So at the end, but by just before this show, Shawn Michaels' lawyer had sort of said to the WWF that, you know, he hadn't breached his contract, but he was injured because of the fight with Brett. Shawn's requested a meeting with Vince, like, a few days after this show that we're reviewing, and that they are now going to settle their differences and make plans for Shawn to be back soon.
Okay. So is that why Vince was like, we know that he's coming back and it'll be fine?
Yes. The idea for the tag tournament apparently was figured out before they knew Sean was going to be back. But now that Sean is potentially going to be back, he may be the partner. You know, I mean, there's so many things that can change. But
right. It seems like something's changing all the time. Like,
oh, every week.
Way more than nowadays, right? Like, I mean, things change nowadays. Like, people get injured and stuff happens and you have to rework stories. But it seems like at this point in 1997, huge stars, like top people, are just constantly dropping out or going away or trying to adjust a sunroof and getting in car accidents. Like, it seems like something's happening all the time.
But I think what's interesting about it is that the shows feel a little bit more must-see in the sense of, like, if you missed an episode of Retro Raw, I don't know if you could just turn on the next one and know exactly what's happening. Because
I could barely turn on this one and know what was happening.
Exactly. But I think that, you know, part of the problem now is just with having the 3-hour Raws or whatever, is that you can, or even the SmackDown that we just reviewed, which was a good show, but it was fine, but like, you could have missed it.
And it was a fun watch, but it was easily skippable.
So I think that the bad is obviously the fact that to be fair, see in 1997, they are very good at coming up with contingency plans. Very good at it.
Yeah.
It all kind of feels seamless for the most part, which is mad given how many injuries and fights and all these different things that go on. So Vince and JR kind of have this thing where they're talking about what's happening, and then Steve Austin comes out, and there's that great thing where like Austin's clearly come out of the curtain and the fans cheer and then his music hits. Almost like it's not planned that he's coming out. And then there's this great moment where Austin's coming down in the ring and JR's just like, I think it's your turn to interview him, Vince.
Yep.
and, Kevin Austin's motioning to one of them to come in the ring. So they come in, and Austin said he doesn't need a partner, but then Mankind's in the Titantron. He says he feels a bond between them after Steve Austin flipped him off last week.
When you looked me in the eye and gave me the finger, I felt a bond between the two of us. He's so adorable. I love Mankind now.
He feels... Isn't it funny that those vignettes have made you fall in love with him? Whereas before, yeah, you couldn't really have cared less.
Yeah, I really didn't care about him at all before those vignettes, but now... And it's so weird too, right? Because I've seen those vignettes before. It's not like those were completely new to me, but seeing them in context, and then I think it's partially Mankind's character too. The way he speaks and the way he's acting and everything since the vignettes is obviously very different. He's a lot more endearing, and he has a lot more to, I guess, like, I don't know, just make me love him. Like, he's talking about wanting to be Stone Cold's partner, and I don't know, Austin had said something about how he didn't ask for Shawn Michaels' long hair or something like that. And because, again, with the long hair, like, we think this is why we don't like Shawn Michaels? No. But Mankind going, I already have long hair, I can wear one earring, and I can shake my ass, I have a nice ass. And Austin's like, you have a nice fat ass.
So they have a kind of back and forth, and, you know, Austin's talking about he didn't need Shawn Michaels and his long hair and his butt shaking, and yeah. And Mankind's like, I've got long hair, I can wear one earring, and I've got a great looking butt. Austin's kind of just like, whatever. So it comes back.
Austin cannot be bothered.
Vince is talking about, you know, you get Brian Pillman tonight. The Hart Foundation are going to be handcuffed to ringside. But then Ken Shamrock comes out and interrupts. He thinks Steve Austin's a bully, and that, you know, he hates bullies, and he wants a match with Austin right now. Austin says he's got no problem taking him out after he takes care of Brian Pillman. And then Shamrock tells Austin, you know, it's time to knuckle up, and then just walks away.
You chose to get in my zone, and now it's time to knuckle up. I'll be here.
What was really great about it was, at the end...
Still focused on his zone.
Yeah, he loves his zone. But before I kind of throw it to you for this segment, what I liked about it at the end, I liked the chaos of it, obviously, because I love chaos, and 1997 is full of it. But I liked at the end when, like, the music was playing to move things on, but as the music's playing and JR's trying to, like, you know, go to whatever's next, you've got Steve Austin and Vince kind of shouting at each other in the ring. So there's, like, a lot going on at the same time. It feels quite... It doesn't feel like it's all pre-planned when I'm watching it. It feels natural, if that makes sense. But...
Yeah, it does.
What did you think of the opening segment?
I loved the opening segment. I thought it was great for a lot of the reasons you said. I love the chaos of it. I love that it... And it sounds so cheesy to say, like, it feels like anything could happen, or, like, you know, anyone could interrupt anyone. But I like the logic of Ken Shamrock coming out and interrupting Steve Austin as well, because, I've been saying Steve Austin is not a proper babyface. He's not at all. He's not, like, a good guy. He's just a guy you cheer. So Ken Shamrock coming out and saying that Austin's a bully and is no different to the Hart Foundation, like, that makes perfect sense to me. And I'm super into Ken Shamrock right now. And I would love to see Ken Shamrock versus Steve Austin. Like, when he challenges Austin to the match, I was like, yes, please, I want to see this. This would be amazing. Mm-hmm. And they sort of hint that it would happen tonight, maybe, but Austin has to fight Pillman, but we're not really sure what's going to happen. And I don't know, it was a confrontation that I definitely enjoyed. And Ken Shamrock was not who I expected to come out to confront Steve Austin, right? Like, I'm so used to today where people do their promos and then they just leave and nothing really happens. And so when unexpected people come to interrupt, it feels more fun.
Yeah, I think that came across. So we then get an interview backstage with Brian Pillman. Vince is kind of, you know, talking about the toilet thing that happened to him at King of the Ring. And Brian Pillman tells Vince that even though the Hart Foundation are going to be handcuffed, that he's the one that's the convicted felon. And Ken Shamrock's got nothing to worry about because Steve Austin's going to go down the toilet tonight.
Why are we handcuffing the Hart Foundation to the ring?
So that Steve Austin can get Brian Pillman one-on-one. Because obviously all the time the Hart Foundation interfere. Because that's all they do. They interfere and everything.
And I mean, I bet that they won't interfere if they're handcuffed to the ring and have to be out there at ringside and not kept backstage.
Almost like when you have a cage match that the two wrestlers are confined inside and nobody can interfere.
Right, exactly. I bet that would never happen. I bet the stipulation will go off without a hitch. I maintain it's a really stupid stipulation, but I mean, it adds for some fun shenanigans in the main event.
We get the first match of the WWF Tag Team Championship Tournament, Sondra. It's the former champions, Owen Hart and Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog, taking on the new Blackjacks.
Huzzah.
This match goes about 4 minutes, so probably about 3 minutes longer than it should have. The Blackjacks are atrocious.
They are terrible. I mean, they cut a promo before the match, and Wyndham's like, this is their chance at glory, and Bradshaw says they're walking out the winners, but when you Canadian idiots get hit with a lariat, you won't be walking out at all. Ha, 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 ha. And it's like, yeah, you're lame. And then Owen basically cut a promo, was like, we will win. And they did.
And they did, yeah.
So,
Owen
I miss
hits,
the stalker.
Owen hits a spinning heel kick, and then British Bulldog rolls up. I think it's Barry Wyndham. Or is it Bradshaw? It's one of them.
Yeah.
Anyway, it happens.
He pins Bradshaw.
Okay, there we go. I mean, it was crap. But at least the right team advanced, so.
Bradshaw's mustache has gotten pointier.
It has.
That was my main note for this match.
So we get a recap of what happened with the Nation of Domination last week to the most 90s techno music of all time.
Like,
it was insane. I could not understand how this was the music that somebody thought, how can we capture the destruction of a nation? Soft techno.
Of course.
I mean, I
can't think of any better music.
I mean, I thought it
was incredible.
I loved it, but that's, you know. And then we cut back to Undertaker and Paul Bearer. And the Undertaker's about to speak, and Paul Bearer says, "Hush, rigor mortis," and then starts speaking. It ended me. Absolutely.
I loved it. It cracked me up. He's like, it's not what you want, it's what I want. But yes, hush, rigor mortis was amazing. I like the dynamic right now with Paul Bearer constantly interrupting the Undertaker, because the Undertaker looks like he has something he wants to say, but Paul Bearer's like, nope, nope, nope. As long as I have this secret, you'll do what I say, right? And and then Paul Bearer also says, you know, and Ahmed will do what I say as well if he knows what's good for him. And I just can't imagine that Ahmed Johnson is going to be all that happy about this.
And there's these great moments in this one and later on in the promo with Ahmed, where like Paul Bearer does these facial expressions when he's not talking that are like incredible.
Mm-hmm.
He's a joy.
His wound is healing quite nicely as well.
But he also seems to be putting on more weight every single week.
He is definitely expanding for sure, or just like melting into himself.
But we then speak to Ken Shamrock very quickly. He said that Steve Austin should never have given him the Stone Cold Stunner, and it's time to knuckle up. I feel like this knuckle up phrase is not quite getting over, but I appreciate him trying.
I mean, it's a valiant attempt, but no, it's not going so well. Ken Shamrock in promos, maybe not the best. Ken Shamrock just throwing people around, I love.
Yeah, no, he is tremendous. Up next we had Phineas Godwin taking on Hunter Hearst Helmsley with China. Phineas Godwin, who's kind of been like, I guess just kind of, he turns up now and then to do a job, because obviously Henry's not around, but we were talking about this kind of off air on Facebook. Phineas Godwin's maybe the worst wrestler on this roster. Maybe.
He is terrible.
Who's worse, Phineas Godwin or Crush?
Oh boy, that's real tricky. See, at least Crush had the Nation. They're both really bad. I think maybe Phineas Godwin is worse, though. I think I dislike him more, which is weird because you'd think, you know, wrestling farmers, I should be into that. But for some reason, I just don't like Phineas Godwin. But Crush's heart punch is absolute dog shit too.
Yes, it is terrible. I did think that, I don't know if you got this, because obviously I think that we had, by the time we started watching Retro Raw, this was done, but they did do a little bit of kind of continuity with Phineas that I thought was quite good, where Phineas is going for the slop drop and China gets up in the apron, and then she's trying to distract him, so he gives her a kiss. But that kind of plays into what happened last year when Sonny would get on the apron and sort of like flirt with Phineas a little bit. And every time he would be distracted and he would lose matches, like all the time. So I kind of like the idea that he was like smarter to it this time a little bit, as smart as Phineas Godwin can get.
But he wasn't smart, though. Like, he wasn't smart at all. Maybe he was a little smarter, but he was still an idiot because he was about to win. He was about to win with the slop drop over Hunter Hearst Helmsley. I was just like, why is Phineas Godwin getting this much offense on Hunter Hearst Helmsley, the King of the Ring? But whatever.
Can you imagine if he became King Phineas?
Oh, for fuck's sake. Like, I can imagine that.
it would be like Jinder Mahal becoming champ.
Oh, ha-ha, yeah, funny that.
But, by the way, can I just very quickly, this is not Retro Raw related, but I really just want your thoughts. Jinder Mahal's dream match is to face The Rock. Please indulge me with your thoughts.
You know what? I'd be okay with it. Because you know how I feel about The Rock, right? And you know how I feel about The Rock interacting with anyone I like.
So that's kind of a perfect marriage, right?
It's kind of, yeah, no, it's kind of perfect because I don't actually care if The Rock just, you know, murders Jinder Mahal. And so why not book it? Book it now.
And obviously he wants the title unification match with Brock.
Obviously.
Well. Yep. So that guy is destined for big things.
Bless him. Bless him for trying.
Do you know what that's like? It's like when you, remember when you, this is horrible. There's a movie called Little Miss Sunshine. With
I love Little Miss Sunshine.
With Abigail Breslin. And she wants to do the dancing and become the beauty queen. And it's like when you're watching it, you're going, look, I just know she's not going to become that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like when that's what listening to Jinder say he wants the Brock match is like for me. This is Jinder's version of being a beauty queen.
But the thing with Jinder is that it might actually happen. That's how you feel about Jinder Mahal going into a WWE championship match, right? Is that you're not going to become the champion. Like, you're Jinder Mahal, but he did.
True. Why couldn't they have given her in Little Miss Sunshine, she could have became the beauty queen and Jinder could have not won the belt. That would have been a much better way to make the world even and good.
Anyway. I would have definitely taken it as a trade-off. It's like one of my favorite movies.
It's a great movie. I'm very surprised. I was midway through that reference. I thought I'm about to reference a movie. Sandra has never seen movies. So I managed to name one of the five that you've seen.
I know. It's kind of incredible, right? Because normally you'll be like, oh yeah, so this happened in, you know, Ghostbusters or Austin Powers or something. And I'm like, yep, I'm sure it did.
So then we go from there to having...
But can I just say how, like... I was raging about Phineas Godwin kissing Chyna because I didn't remember this continuity with Sunny, right? Because I didn't see it, so how could I remember it? I think we started Retro Raw and it was... Guns had, like, faced the Godwins at Mind Games or something, like, before?
The Bulldog and Owen had won the tag titles at Mind Games from the Smoking Guns, so Sunny dumped the Smoking Guns.
Okay.
And she there got the Smoking Guns from the Godwins.
Okay, like there was something with the Godwins that was in a video package or something that we saw, I think, on the first episode of Retro Raw, them interacting with Sunny. And I know I vaguely remember her being involved with the Godwins too. But it's just, like, it annoyed me. Like, Chyna gets up on the apron, and Chyna's always going to interfere, right? And instead of, like, shoving her off the apron or something like that, oh, no, she's a lady, I better kiss her against her will. Chyna is not complicit in this. I was not happy with Phineas Godwin.
I'm going to argue this one a little bit. I feel like she, like, because the thing is, what I thought was kind of clever about it was he knew he couldn't hit her. So, like, but he can, like, try and kiss her, and if she doesn't like it, she can get off the ring apron. Like, he did the only
thing. He can't hit her, but he can sexually assault her. That's fine.
He did not sexually assault her. He kissed her. She's been assaulting people for the last 6 months. Every week.
I just think he should shove her off the apron.
But he can't. Then he'll get arrested.
Why would he get arrested? She's in she's around the wrestling ring. I think that's the whole dynamic. Like, I just don't understand why people aren't allowed to even, like, push her out of the way or anything like that.
She gets pushed eventually.
Right. But it's just, it seems like it's taking a while.
It's going to still be a while. I'm going to warn you of that right now. But yeah, we did get after the match though, when Phineas's stupidity cost him the match and Hunter won with the pedigree, that Henry Godwin came out and yelled at Phineas for losing and took him to the back. Change of pace for the Godwins.
I really understand what's going on with this, because his neck was broken, so I know that that's why he's not wrestling with Phineas. Like,
well, he's
okay,
now, he's,
so this
he's
is terrible,
now.
But like, if one of the Godwins had to have a broken neck, why did it have to be Henry?
Sondra Rheinstein, everyone. Wishing broken necks on
I'm not
wrestlers.
Wishing broken necks on anyone. I'm just saying that if there's an allotment of broken necks and one of them has to happen.
Are you aware of how broken necks work? It's not an allotment.
Well, no, I
it's
know.
It's not like
I'm
a waiting room you go,
works.
Right, okay, so we need to do a broken neck this week. Who's it going to be? Okay, who didn't pay for beer last night? Henry, up you come. Let's snap that neck. But he's back now. Henry Godwin's back.
He is, and he's apparently more aggressive lately. That's what they say. And
I
you
mean,
know,
I'd be angry. If I was him, I'd be angry that Phineas was so stupid.
Well, I would be angry too, because Phineas is stupid. I don't understand why he's been with Phineas this whole time. I mean, I guess because they're brothers and also the hog farmers together, and they
hog
can't
and
dissolve the hog and pig, exactly. But yeah, they're like, Henry hasn't smiled since the Legion of Doom broke his neck or whatever. And then he also yells at Vince McMahon, though, which I thought was weird. He was like, it's all your fault, McMahon. So even the likes of Henry Godwin are starting to tell Vince McMahon off and be like, hey, so you're the owner of this company and this is all on you.
We shall see where it goes. We have Farouk promising two bigger, better, badder, and blacker members of the Nation of Domination.
Indeed.
We will see.
What did he say at first? He was like, did you say tip or did you say pig? Well, I can tell you one thing. When they come together with me, you'll want me to say they're cotton pickers, but they're not.
Yes, he did. Basically, Farouk says everything that white people cannot say in any way, shape, or form. Then we get Sunny, though. She comes out to do some ring announcing duties. And we've got Paulie Dangerously on commentary. It's Brian Christopher versus Chris Candido. This, again, is part of this whole ECW thing, which really doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. You know, they bring up, you know, that Brian Christopher's Jerry Lawler's son, and he would admit he's related to him. And then once that's been brought up, Jerry Lawler runs down and, like, ends up interfering. And then, so Rob Van Dam joins Jerry Lawler and Christopher, and they start beating on Candido, and then Tommy Dreamer comes in, and he's got a steel chair, and it's a big schmoz. Any thoughts on this cluster?
I mean, I had forgotten that Chris Candido was Skip of the Body Donnas, because we just saw him once on Retro Raw, only on the first episode. I don't know why any of this is happening. And I guess I still don't understand why it's such a big deal that, like, Brian Christopher is Jerry Lawler's son. He wouldn't acknowledge him. I mean, they're talking about it. They're treating it like, oh my gosh, this is the secret. Like, it's not that much of a secret. He looks just like him. And I don't get why it's that big of a deal. And
you know why he genuinely didn't want people to know?
Was it because you would feel old?
Yes.
Fuck's sake.
I love telling you facts that are going to make you like Jerry Lawler less. It's one of my favorite parts. Because then what happens is you'll do something good and you kind of, begrudgingly have
oh,
to
I resent every time he's actually good on anything. Like,
he just doesn't want people to think that he has a grown son who is Brian Christopher. So, but yeah, the ECW thing is quite weird. In the Observer at this point, it was noted that the plan was for the ECW stuff to actually lead to something at SummerSlam. That does not happen. But that's the idea at the moment.
I just don't know why I should care about bad blood between ECW and USWA when I'm watching WWF.
Yes. And then the other thing that I don't know if you noticed this in commentary, which was pretty intense, was that Paul Heyman had talked about, when he was talking about Brian Christopher being Jerry Lawler's son, and Lawler comes out and sort of slaps Heyman, whatever, that, like, Heyman said that Brian Christopher's mother was 38 years old, and basically he did that to give the idea that she was 12 when they had Brian Christopher.
I did hear him say that.
To sort of play up his arrest that he'd had a few years before. Which he was found not guilty of, so I don't want to, you know, cast aspersions on that. But that, yeah, that was... Like, can you imagine now anybody bringing up something like that on TV? Imagine.
I mean, it might spice things up a little bit.
God, I know. Be good.
I mean, unfortunately, like, it sucks because Paul Heyman is obviously so good at what he does, right? Like, one of the very, very best. And it sucks because he's so charismatic and so interesting, but he's not involved in anything that I'm interested in at this point.
Yeah, it's a shame. We see some clips of WWF at the Sky Dome from Saturday night with the Hart Foundation, and everybody was cheering them. I love the idea that, like, for a house show, they went to the Sky Dome.
Right?
But then, like, this Raw that we're watching from Lake Placid, New York, had... Let me just... I had the attendance here a minute ago. It had 2,773 people.
That's it?
Yep.
Wow.
Because at this
they're
point...
They're in the Sky Dome for a house show, I mean...
It's because at this point, this is the first time they've been doing live Raws, so there's not really been a lot of time to put tickets on sale and stuff. But there you go. So we then go into...
Okay, so when they were talking about upcoming events, like before the Sky Dome footage, mm-hmm. were they talking about a tanning contest?
Yeah, I think they were. That's a Sunny and Sable thing.
Sunny, Marlena, and Chyna are in it.
Yeah, but the whole thing with China is China's like... Remember the Miss Rumble 2000 contest and remember Ivory?
Oh boy, do I.
Remember Ivory?
Yes.
I imagine China would have the Ivory role.
I would hope so.
Or the Luna role.
Yeah. Luna was great.
Goldust is facing Jim Neville Neidhart as he continues to sort of like subtly feud with the Hart Foundation, but not too loudly. And and then the Bulldog comes down, interfere, tries to mess with Marlena. She tries to slap him, but Bulldog catches it. Goldust, you know, knocks Davey Boy out, and then Jim Neville Neidhart nails him from behind. But in the end, they're in the ring, and Jim Neville Neidhart like bounces Goldust off the ropes. He wants to back body drop Goldust, but Goldust kneels down and uppercuts him for a 1-2-3.
He beats him with that stupid slap that I hate.
But the uppercut.
Yeah, I don't like it because it's like the most annoying move because you have to just like bend over and then wait to be hit. It's even worse than bending over and waiting to be kicked, right? Like because you have to drop down to your knees and then, you know, hit the person and it looks stupid and he just wins. And shouldn't Jim the Anvil Neidhart not succumb to such a transitional move, maybe?
Well, yeah, also, like, why is Jim the Anvil Neidhart being pinned by one uppercut?
I don't know.
And then, of course, they play the British Bulldogs music for, like, no reason. Have to put it off. Then turn on Goldust music. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
It did not go to plan. Is it an uppercut or is it a slap?
I mean, I think it's supposed to be an uppercut, but it's just executed so poorly.
Don't think it is an uppercut, though. I think he just hits him. But regardless, this was shit. I didn't like it.
We can move on from that. We get Steve Austin talking about, you know, Ken Shamrock.
Oh, the only other thing I had for that was, you know, they keep talking about his wife, Terry, known professionally as Marlena. And it just made me think, like, can you imagine if Total Divas had been around for Goldust and Marlena?
It would have been excellent.
I would have watched the shit out of that.
You know they would have orchestrated a Dusty Rhodes reunion episode.
Of course they would have.
Steve Austin does a promo about Ken Shamrock, guaranteeing that he will rock his world. That's the bottom line. Takes us into hour two. We're gonna have Steve Austin versus Brian Pillman. We're gonna have Owen, Neidhart, and Bulldog all handcuffed to the ring posts. Steve Austin is basically kind of got the upper hand, but it goes out of control, there's ref bumps, there's interference, there's all these things going on, and then eventually, obviously, the Hart Foundation attack Austin, as always, because they get free, because I think it's Owen pickpockets the referee, gets the handcuff key.
Yeah, he does.
And then, after it, Mankind, Goldust, and Shamrock come out, Mankind somehow gets, like, taken out of it, and then we're left with LOD, Goldust, Shamrock, and Austin. They want to be the five that take on the Hart Foundation. Steve Austin reluctantly says yes. A lot going on, but what did you think of this whole match and post-match angle to set up the Canadian Stampede?
I was so glad that this match happened, because the rest of this Raw, I was just not into at all up until this point. I mean, like, the opening segment was pretty good with Steve Austin, but it's rare that we get, like, a good wrestling match where I could be invested in the action as well as the story, right? And this was that. Mm-hmm. This was that for me. So thank you, Retro Raw, for giving me this. And, I mean, Pillman and Austin are great together, right? And so it was supposed to be, like, a no DQ type match, right? Or wasn't it? Because I was not clear on that.
Well, no, I think the idea was just that they would all be handcuffed so it could be one-on-one.
So it could be one-on-one. But, I mean, like, they're using weapons and stuff. Like, they're...
Yeah,
it's
not.
Pillman chokes him with a cable at some point. They're using weapons. Like, there were brass knuckles involved.
These are 1997 referees. Let's bear that
in
mind.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Austin just, like, kicks Baby Mike Chioda and stunners him when he tries to break up Austin kicking Pillman in the corner at one point. Because it's like, why wouldn't I stunner the referee? And for some reason, it's not a disqualification, right? Like, just like when China shoved Phineas Godwin in the match earlier, like, that wasn't a disqualification either. Because 1997 referees are so terrible. They're so bad. But, I mean, second referee coming out. Mankind and Goldust, Ken Shamrock, chaos. I love the chaos of this. It was so much fun. And the wrestling was good before it. So, you know, strangely enough, though, I mean, that handcuff to the ring stipulation didn't work out.
It didn't. I did like Goldust's fire in the promo after the match, where he said they're going to come to Calgary and kick their ass. LOD looked good in sort of like coming out to just make the save. And I liked that Austin was like, I don't really want you guys, but I'll take it, but we're not friends. I liked that he kept his character intact.
Yeah, he was like, we're not going to be hanging out together. We ain't going to be drinking beer together. It'll be back to this. And then, like, presumably he flips off the camera and swears because they cut away from him so you can't see it. But I thought it was weird that Goldust was the one to say, like, let's all get together and work. I don't know who else would do it, but Goldust just seems like such an odd choice.
Goldust is Unity.
Like, weird. Apparently, like, where did Mankind go in all of this? Because he was out there.
I do not know where he went.
Because, like, I keep thinking, because he keeps getting involved in this, so I keep thinking that Mankind is going to be part of the team, but he's just not.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the idea was that they didn't want Mankind in the team, so they kind of, like, had him get out of Dodge before the rest of them did their thing. But it doesn't really make sense. I'll tell you the worst part of this show, without question, was the next match. Absolutely
hot.
So
yes.
Sable comes out. She's the guest ring announcer.
Which she should never be, by the way. Her voice is so grating on the ears.
You guys having fun? Oh, God. Dying of fire, Sable. This match is showcasing the light heavyweight division. Now, I love Jim Cornette. I love the guy. Spent a lot of good time with him. And a lot of his ideas I'm very much behind. But one idea that I do not think worked was having Bobby Fulton and Tommy Rogers of the Fantastics, of the 80s, turn up on Raw and have this match. First of all, to Bobby Fulton, why he thought two shades of blue would be good for a one non-leg pant thing was a good idea. I have no clue. It was terrible.
It wasn't a good idea, just to clarify.
Tommy Rogers looked okay. Like, Tommy Rogers, I felt like he could be more... Like, because the thing is, Tommy Rogers didn't look 96 years old. Bobby Fulton looked like a dad.
He looked so old. Like,
he looked like he could be my dad.
Yeah, and at one point, one of the announcers says, you know, what do you know about Bobby Fulton in the blue tights? And I think... JR was like, he's a young man who for the past 15 years or so, dot, 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 dot. And it's like, he is not a young man. Like, he does not look like a young man in any way, shape, or form. He also does not look like someone who should be in the light heavyweight division, necessarily. Like, he just looks like a dude who's vaguely out of shape.
Yeah, I don't understand why this match was on. And plus, like, if this is the way you want to introduce a light heavyweight division, my God. No. Who won again? I can't remember.
Tommy Rogers with, like, a kill switch, I think.
Do you remember which one was which?
No.
Good. Okay, cool.
Well, I mean, now that we just talked about Bobby Fulton having the blue tights, I can vaguely picture Tommy...
Rogers.
I just said Tommy Fulton, didn't I? So clearly, I'm not keeping them straight very well. No, but it didn't make any sense. I mean, this was worse than 205 Live type presentation.
I mean, that's like, saying that this is worse than 205 Live is like stubbing your toe in a door and going, that was painful.
Right.
Like it's, but yeah, I agree. Mark Merrow then comes out, the Wild Man, to try and get Sable to go back to the dressing room. Subtle hints that he's not too happy that she's parading herself around. How do you feel about the slow reintroduction of the Wild Man?
I mean, I'd be curious to see him do more. Is he still injured at this point?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, it makes sense that he's not wrestling and, you know, doing a whole bunch of stuff. But, yeah, I mean, Sable just, she's a charisma black hole, isn't she? Like, she's just
terrible.
Awful. She's so bad. I mean, she just looks confused as to why she's there most of the time. She's just like waving, going, "Hi, I'm Sable. Yeah, like, look at my tits." Like, no, just go away.
Can you do that one more time for me, please?
Like, "Hi, I'm Sable. Look at my tits."
That's a t-shirt. Anyway, we move on to the second match in the WWF Tag Team Championship Tournament. The Headbangers taking on Jerry the King Lawler and Rob Van Dam. What a sentence that is. Rob
Seriously.
Van Dam, who is legitimately, like, you know, one of the big stars in wrestling and the up-and-comers and all that. Jerry Lawler, who is gripping onto youth like a bad rash. And the Headbangers, who are about 5 years... feel like they were in MTV 5 years before this. But it all comes together, and the Sandman ends up getting involved and low-blowing Jerry Lawler with his cane, and exits so the Headbangers can do their stage dive finisher on the King. For the 1-2-3, the Headbangers advance to join Owen Hart and the British Bulldog in the semi-finals of the tournament, and afterwards we get a brawl with Rob Van Dam against the Sandman, Tommy Dreamer. Any thoughts, Sondra?
I mean, again, I don't really understand why ECW... and WWF are having this whole thing if it's not going to go anywhere, right? And I'm not sure who I'm, like, I'm obviously not supposed to cheer for RVD and Jerry Lawler because they're the heels, and RVD is like, it's weird because the whole ECW thing, they almost present ECW like the baby faces, right? Because they have, you know, Tommy Dreamer and, you know, the Sandman, like, I'm supposed to cheer them. I'm supposed to be like, yeah, they're getting involved, and they're costing RVD and Jerry Lawler, which is great. And, you know, Lawler's always saying that, you know, RVD is the only piece of talent that came from ECW, so of course he's going to team with him. So because Lawler doesn't like ECW, it feels like I'm supposed to like ECW, but if ECW is going to be fighting WWF, then am I supposed to cheer for ECW over WWF? It's all very confusing, and I don't like it very much. But, I mean, the match was fine. The Headbangers are... the Headbangers. Masha's leggings were very pretty.
How good did the Sandman look?
He looked good. I always forget what the Sandman looks like. Like, every time I think of the Sandman, I just have this vague picture of, like, a nondescript man shoving beer into his forehead. And I always forget that he has this, like, glorious mustache, blonde hair look about him.
Yeah, I like the Headbangers. I think they're a good act. They feel like they're quite relevant to the 90s, which is good. You know, especially just coming out of watching fucking The Fantastics. Jesus.
Bobby Fulton. The Headbangers to The Fantastics for sure.
Bobby Fulton, who by all accounts is a lovely guy, so I'm not, you know, shitting on him as a person, but like, Bobby Fulton looked like, if you didn't know, what age would you say Bobby Fulton was in 1997? If you were just presented with him outside the context of wrestling as a person, hi Sondra, here is this man, how old is he?
Is this going to be a Doc Hendricks situation? I mean, just looking at Bobby Fulton, I'd say he was like in his 40s.
I just want an exact number.
42.
Okay. At this show, at this point in time, Bobby Fulton was 36 years old.
Really?
Bobby Fulton on this show is younger than John Cena, Sheamus, Brock Lesnar, the Hardy Boys.
Bobby Roode,
AJ Styles. And he still wrestles today.
Really?
Yep.
I mean... wow.
Anyway, with that in mind, we go from that to the main event. Ahmed Johnson, The Undertaker. We get a brief promo with them backstage with Ahmed, Undertaker, and Paul Bearer. Ahmed talks about how he respects The Undertaker, but if Paul Bearer tries to get in his way, Undertaker and him are going to have a problem. Paul Bearer's kind of doing a thing, which is funny.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it just a great, like, you put up a tweet with a graphic of these three, right?
Yeah, just what a cast of characters. The Undertaker, Paul Bearer, and Ahmed Johnson all together. They just, I don't know, like, they're just not a cast of characters that you would really picture together, but wrestling, you know? And I love that he calls Paul Bearer Doughboy.
Pillsbury Doughboy, yep.
Pillsbury Doughboy.
So it's Ahmed Johnson, The Undertaker, taking on Farouk and a partner. So Farouk comes out with D'Lo, who's not in wrestling gear. Farouk then just kind of blabbers on for quite a long time, talking about Kama Mustafa, which nobody really knows what that means. Now, Kama used to be in WWF a couple of years before as Kama, as part of the Million Dollar Corporation, but he was never called Kama Mustafa.
Okay, and so then, I was going to ask if he was called Kama before.
Yeah, he was called Kama, but I mean, this was like the worst way to return somebody, because Farouk seemed to be like, here's Kama Mustafa, come on down, and then just kept talking.
Yeah.
So there was no, like, cue for Kama to come out, and then Kama all of a sudden comes from through under the ring ropes to attack Undertaker, and like has the worst gear in the world because he still has a little bit of a gut that he needs to get rid of, but he's in this like really tight gear. It's weird. So the whole premise of the match is like, well, where's the other member of the Nation of Domination? So the Undertaker's basically like, you know, getting beat up for the pretty much the whole match, and then Undertaker's going to kind of go towards Ahmed, but then Ahmed gets distracted by Paul Bearer. He pushes Paul Bearer down, and then Kama hits like a uranage for the win over the Undertaker after like 3.5 minutes.
Yeah, it was weird because, I mean, the Undertaker never actually tagged out, right? And so I didn't even hear the match start. I never heard the bell because Farouk was just talking so long, and then Kama Mustafa came down and it was like, all right, so I guess he's his partner, and then the match just sort of started happening. And Ahmed, what, because they both like, they double team the Undertaker to start out, and Ahmed Johnson's not helping at all. He's just standing there in the corner, and I was like, oh, did this match actually start? Is he waiting to tag? Like, that doesn't seem like a thing that Ahmed Johnson would normally do. But I suppose it all made sense when we find out that Ahmed Johnson is actually the third member of the Nation of Domination, or the fourth member of the Nation of Domination. He's the other partner of theirs, which is strange and makes absolutely no sense. Like, as they're speculating, did you notice that they're like, we're waiting on the third member of the Nation, you know, that Farouk is going to bring in, but like, what are we waiting for him for? Like, he's not going to be in the match.
Yeah, why?
What is
why
he gonna
is yeah? When,
do?
Yeah, it made no sense. But then obviously, like at the end, you know, Nation of Domination cleared out, and Ahmed Johnson picks up Undertaker, gives him a Pearl River Plunge, walks to the top of the ramp, and joins the Nation and does the fist pump. I'm just curious, like, how did you feel that Ahmed Johnson had joined the Nation of Domination? Because you've pretty much got to see, you started watching Retro Raw a month after the first attack of Farouk Assad on Ahmed, and you've basically got to see the entire Nation of Domination run for the last 9 months almost.
I mean, I feel like Ahmed Johnson and the Nation of Domination are just going to interact forever. I feel like it's still going on to this day. Because I can't imagine it ending, because that's just, it's all I've seen Ahmed Johnson do is be involved with the Nation of Domination. I mean, I knew that this was going to happen at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that it was going to be now, and it doesn't really make all that much sense, because Ahmed Johnson has been fighting the Nation like constantly, right? And I guess he kind of teased when he came out to help Farouk when the Undertaker was chokeslamming him constantly at, was that at King of the Ring when Paul Bearer was like, no, you need to keep chokeslamming him. So Ahmed Johnson came out and made the save. And so it was kind of like, all right, that's weird that he's saving Farouk when they've been fighting constantly. And like, he finally just got his victory over Farouk, what, last week, I think. So do they respect each other now? Is it because of the Paul Bearer situation? It's kind of confusing as to why Ahmed Johnson internally would want to join the Nation of Domination after all of the shit that Farouk says about him and all of the shit that he says about Farouk. And I don't know, it's kind of confusing. I wasn't shocked only because I knew that it was going to happen at some point, but it's confusing and not, I don't know if it had quite the effect that they want it to.
Interestingly enough, Ahmed Johnson behind the scenes was very, very resistant of turning heel. So the idea, as of right now, is that him joining the Nation of Domination is going to be explained in a way that he's technically not turned heel.
I mean, that's kind of what I'm getting from it. I'm curious to know what Ahmed's going to say, if for no other reason than it means, you know, a glorious Ahmed promo, which I always love.
Of course, of course. But yeah, so that happened. But yeah, I remember when this happened when I was younger, and I was so devastated that Ahmed Johnson joined the Nation.
Well, he's been such a good guy, right? Like, he's always been the one who's, like, trying to save people and stand up for good and also maybe injure a lot of people with a 2x4. But, you know, he's Ahmed Johnson, and we love him.
And obviously, you know, the thing is, I'm intrigued to get your take on this. Obviously, they want to go with Undertaker versus Ahmed Johnson as a match. Do you think that it would have been less effective, or is it less... What is the most effective way to have Ahmed Johnson versus The Undertaker? Would it be babyface versus babyface, or is it a better idea to have him go with The Nation and do it that way, in your opinion?
I think babyface versus babyface would have been more effective, just because it seems more true to Ahmed Johnson's character, and I could absolutely see Ahmed Johnson wanting to face The Undertaker given the Paul Bearer situation. I think that's the more interesting story, is, you know, Ahmed Johnson wanting to stand up to The Undertaker and, you know, get him away from Paul Bearer, and kind of like, I don't know why Ahmed Johnson has gotten it in his head that he needs to, you know, stand up and face Paul Bearer and, like, I don't know, avenge whatever. I'm not really sure what Ahmed Johnson's motivation is for getting involved in the Paul Bearer Undertaker situation, other than maybe he just wants the title shot. But I think him trying to say, like, he doesn't respect Paul Bearer and going after that is a more compelling story than, like, having him join the Nation almost seems like it confuses the issue.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I get that. What about your thumb for this show? Is it up? Is it middle? Is it down?
Down.
Interesting.
I didn't like this show. I really liked Pillman Austin. I really, really liked that. But the rest of the show, I mean, Bobby Fulton and Tommy Rogers, seriously?
I give it a middle, only because I loved all the stuff with Austin, Pillman, Hart Foundation, and the Undertaker Ahmed stuff. I liked all that. So I feel there was enough for me to not feel like I'd, like, you know, wasted time in my life watching it. But there was some absolute dross on it as well. So
yeah,
I'm a middle. And also, interestingly enough, this week, 20 years ago, when this show was on, WWF made their newest hire to the announce team, where they brought in a new young man called Michael Cole, who was going to be commentating Shotgun with Jim Cornette.
And so it begins.
And so it begins. Sondra, where can people find you on the Twitter machine?
Find me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, for loads of bonus content, all sorts of stuff.
King of the Ring review from 1995.
King of the Ring review is on there. We're going to be doing Canadian Stampede in, what, 2 weeks?
Yep. We're going to be doing a Money in the Bank review on Monday.
Yeah, that's right.
There's all sorts of stuff
happening. There's so much. There's always so much wrestling.
Get your content. So, yeah. Anyway, have a great weekend, the rest of it. Thank you for all your support. Feel free to tweet us with any questions, or feel free to tweet us if you think that Bobby Fulton looks younger or older than we think he does. And if any of the ladies out there fancy Bobby Fulton for real, I can probably get you his number, so just let me know. Because let's be fair, he's probably a bit hard up, and he'd take anything he can get, so you're safe no matter what.
Poor Bobby Fulton.